Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
So who just joined us?
Cheryl, I'm on the line.
Hello, Cheryl.
And I'm Wendy.
So
hello?
Cheryl,
can you
Wendy.
Hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was worried because I don't see my name lighting up. I'm joining on the computer so I can see, you know, that we have a bunch of people in Texas. This is Erin. I'm the website administrator, and I guess Rick is running a little bit behind because he
asked
me to
call from. No, I'm
right here, Erin.
Erin, I'm here.
Oh, you're here too. Okay. Why did you ask me? It
and
doesn't matter.
Erin,
okay.
Erin, when you joined, everything went double talk.
Oh.
There's an echo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to mute my mic. What matters is that Rick's here, and he's the one who's going to answer questions. So I'll be quiet now.
So, Erin, how many people shall we have online?
I've got three.
Three, good.
It looks like it's you and Wendy and Cheryl, well, and me, so four.
Okay. Good, because I'm having trouble logging in to talk to you. That's why we were struggling here. So, okay. Back to the questions then, because it looked like we had some fun ones for today. Wendy, you had the first one. No.
I'm the last one. Last one, yeah.
Sorry about that.
I think I have that honor, if you want to call it that.
Which one? Who's
Cheryl?
This? Hey, Cheryl.
Cheryl.
Okay.
I'm the married 22 years. My anniversary Saturday. Yeah.
Okay. I'm the
my husband. Remember, I talked to you last week. And
sure do.
Yeah. Well, it was very, very. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But I drew a line in the sand, and he moved in with his adultery partner.
I'm sorry.
Me too. And that's kind of where I am.
You know, Cheryl, at some point, and what's really crazy about this is that, what's your husband's name?
Doug.
Doug. What's really crazy about this is that Doug's going to blame you for what he's doing.
Yes.
And when people get defensive, Cheryl, what's happening is when people have a shame base, they always have to blame someone else. They're always defensive in their response because of their shame. And so they'll always blame another person. So it's always predictable that if someone's having an affair, they always blame their mate, largely because of their shame, because it couldn't be them. And so they're always trying to push the shame away by blaming someone else.
He told me that the night before he left, my daughter was real upset because we were planning on separating. And she made me go ask him again if he was still involved. And, of course, I knew he was, so I had to lay my soul out there again. And he told me that if he stayed with me, it would take work, and he would have to work through all this old history and baggage, and if he leaves, he can be happy, and he doesn't have any of that history or baggage, and that he has a right to be happy, and sayonara.
First off, there is about a 15% chance he'll be happy. So maybe he's, you know, a 15%, well, actually, he won't ever be happy. This won't solve his problem.
He says he doesn't have one anymore.
Yeah, he still has, his problem just got a lot bigger. He doesn't know it yet. What you need to begin thinking about, Cheryl, and this is going to sound really crazy to you, is what are you going to do when he wants to come back?
Yeah, that's crazy.
No, I'll tell you right now, it'll happen. It always does. So what are you going to do when he wants to come back?
I'm not taking him back, but he can go to EMS with me.
Okay. Yeah. Decide now. I mean, it probably won't be this month. It may take several months. But the most likely he will, I mean, I've seen it take as long as a year. But there's at some point, he will try to come back. And a lot of times they try to come back because they're feeling really guilty.
Not that they really want to, huh?
Well, it's mixed. It's not motivations can't be either just black or white. It's a lot more complicated than that. But what you want to look for is repentance. And how would you define repentance if he wanted to come back?
Understanding the pain that he's caused and truly being broken, because all I ever got since disclosure and all I've ever gotten in our 22 years of marriage is justification.
Okay. There you got it. That was well said. You're going to want to see brokenness, because to me, repentance and brokenness are very similar, and especially in this situation, it's about a grieving over what they've done to you. If it's just they're sorry, then a lot of times sorry is more about what it's costing them.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, I call that godly sorrow. So that brokenness aspect is really important. And taking responsibility and just obviously a huge commitment to want to change and a willingness to do what it's going to take to help you heal. Regardless.
What do you do while you're waiting about support and a divorce and et cetera? Because his history is that I take care of everything and he just acts out and does what he wants. So what he wanted was to force me to hold him accountable so he could leave, which I finally did. And now he's going to want me to file so that it doesn't cost him anything.
If I remember right, are you supporting the family?
Yes. Well, I mean, he's got a good job too, but I'm an attorney. I don't do that type of law, but he has got a degree, and he's a manager also of a big car dealership.
So what I recommend, Cheryl, when people get to that place, and this may sound a little manipulative and controlling, but you need to start living much better. You need to start really enjoying life. I had a woman in this position a few years back. It was pretty funny, and he moved in with his affair partner just like this and was actually there for a year. He was an attorney and had an affair with a law partner. And so what she started doing was having a lot of picnics in the park, going to a lot of movies, going out to eat a lot. I mean, she literally, and some of the stuff, she took sailing lessons, but she started really living really well. She actually was living much better after he left than she ever did before. And when they would talk, because they occasionally had to talk, you know, he was fine. I mean, he was having a lot more fun. She was having a lot more fun than he was. And he was kind of blown away at what that response was from her.
I have a little quirk, though, because the economy being what it is, I've been at the same firm since 1992, but my salary actually got cut in half in December when all this happened at the same time. First my job, and then I found out about my husband. And yeah.
So what you're going to want to do is you got to find things that are inexpensive. But you really need to start kind of praying, Cheryl, and say, okay, Lord, just while I'm in this holding season, what are some things that would be enjoyable for me that I can afford, you know, that would be fun? And it may be joining setting up a cooking group. Maybe just going camping with friends over a weekend. What do you do
about, like, him needing to, I have an 18-year-old in college and a 15-year-old at home. What do you do about support if you don't file for divorce?
Well, you ask for support. And obviously, you're an attorney. You know as well as I do that the only way you're going to be able to force the support if he won't do it decently is to go ahead and file.
Yeah. Which is what he wants me to do, because it's always making me call the shot so he can say that he's the victim.
Right.
He's never taken care of the bills. He doesn't even know what insurance he has, where his wills are. He doesn't know what we owe, nothing. He knows nothing.
Good. That's perfect. So now, instead of feeling reluctant to call the shots, now be very grateful that you're calling the shots. And I would say, Cheryl, you don't need to protect him. Call the shots very well. Hit him for as much as you can get. And I know that sounds horrible, but since you know everything and he doesn't.
Well, he would have to get a lawyer to find out any information. All
right.
He got out of the home was his clothes, toiletries, shoes, etc. He didn't get, like, we have a deer lease, which he has control over, but he doesn't have any of his guns or anything like that because I didn't give them to him.
Right. But yeah.
But I can't, the debt and the house payment, I mean, we live in a $300,000 home, and
right.
I can't, you know, since I got cut with the way my firm is going right now, and he knows this, he knows I got cut. I mean, we were still tithing, and we were still making all the payments, but only because together we were able to
right.
make the bills, but not any extras, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and so, again, you ask him first, and if he won't cooperate, for your protection, you file. But don't worry about him playing the victim. You are not the bad guy. But you're
I don't even know who she is or where he is. I've heard nothing. He immediately went and moved his cell phone to a different bill and changed the cell phone bill, which was one of only two things in his name, was our cell phone bill and our American Express. He was primary on those two things only. And he immediately moved his phone and thought, and when he moved it, it took all his history of his communication with this affair partner, but I had already printed it all out.
Yeah.
Before
yeah, but
anticipating that. But
the one thing you don't want to do, and then I need to move to the next column, but the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to chase him. You just want to be very professional right now and keep very distant. And eventually, if you chase him and you pursue, he'll go the other way. If you just start handling things and you know this, document everything.
Right.
Document his lack of contact with the kids, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I've kept a journal since I found out.
Right. And then, but don't feel bad about filing. Ultimately, that's going to cost him a lot more than you. I tell people all the time about, like, EMS weekend. They'll mm-hmm. say, well, you know, that's really expensive. And I go, yeah, it's about 2 months child support. You know, but
yeah.
So in reality, you know, just go ahead and get the money. And when he says, man, that's you hit me for a lot of money there, just sit there and say, well, it was, you know, EMS was cheaper, but you wanted this. And that's great. This affair probably won't work out. But you're just going to have to work on your own healing and taking care of yourself. Have you done Harboring Hope, Cheryl?
I'm in it right now.
Good. Stay.
I'm in Elizabeth's group.
Good. Stay in touch with that group, and I'll be praying for you.
Are y'all the ones that have a? I don't think I've done a mentor thing. Do you have a mentor thing through?
Yes.
I have not done that. I have not signed up for a mentor.
Yeah, if you want a mentor, would be great.
I have a mentor. My husband and I do, and we really have gotten a lot out of that.
And I didn't. Someone told me about that and that I should do that, but I don't remember seeing where I was supposed to do that at.
Well, it's not part of Harboring Hope. The mentor program is through the subscription site on the
website. Wait, that's my fault. I should have gotten Cheryl a mentor already, actually. She was in Harboring Hope, and so it didn't click when she subscribed because she's actually a paying subscriber.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
so she should have one now. I'll get you one by the end of the week, Cheryl.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's go to Brenda's question here. Brenda, you here?
It's just you and Cheryl and Wendy.
Okay, well, I'm going to answer Brenda's question since she posted it.
Okay.
Okay.
She'll probably get the recording.
Okay. I discovered my husband's sexual addiction in the beginning of September of 2008. He's been clean since October of 2008, but as time goes by, I feel worse about our relationship. This is because of me, not him. He's sincerely trying and really different, but I cannot forget about what he's done. I'm so tired of people comparing sex addiction to drugs or alcohol. Honestly, I'd rather him be a drug addict because that's not personal to me. People keep telling me to accept this and move on, but I can't. My husband tells me that he was never attracted to the people he was acting out with and that mentally he wasn't even there. That makes no sense to me. If you're not there mentally, why do it? if sex is the addiction, why didn't he come to me? Why did he go to these disgusting women and act out? I actually had the opportunity to see some of these women, and they were very unattractive, and that's putting it nicely. Why did he run away from me into the arms of women who were ugly inside and out? I feel like somewhere inside of him, he did like it and likes them. And he's just saying he didn't avoid hurting me more. I need to understand this addiction. Do sex addicts actually like the people they are with and what they are doing? And so, Brenda, when you listen to this later, I can tell you, no, they don't like, especially with prostitution and stuff, what the prostitution represents is a fantasy, but they're not even thinking about the other people in the same way they're not really thinking about you at that moment. You mentioned that earlier, which is a really difficult thing to understand. when for a woman, it's incredibly difficult to understand because you could never do what your husband has done unless you had first completely disconnected from your mate. For your husband, I know this isn't going to probably satisfy it, but he operates in compartments, and he wouldn't be able to do what he's doing if he was actually integrated enough to think about what he was doing to you as he did it. The reason he goes to disgusting women is because for sex addicts, there's always an intense shame core, and they feel like that's all they're really worth. So there's a huge element of unworthiness. So they go act out with someone. That shows the level of his own esteem, the person that he's really with. If they're not there mentally and they're just in kind of this other compartment, it is an amazing compulsion, and typically people do it, and I know it's going to sound strange, but it's the only way it feels like they can get their mind back because they get obsessed and they can't stop thinking about doing this vile thing. So eventually they do the vile thing so that they can kind of get rid of it, but at the same time, what they're attracted to really talks a lot about their broken nature or where they're going with that. You know, I would agree with you. Somewhere inside of him, he did like it. I don't think he liked them. I think the difference between OCD and addiction is we initially begin to look to our addictions as a source for our problems, as a sedative. And they really do start off as something that's pleasurable because they provide an escape for us. However, over time, once the addiction begins to control us, it ain't pleasurable anymore. In fact, it just becomes an absolute living hell, and you keep wondering why you keep hooking up with fat, ugly women or whatever. But you can't stop it by that point. At the first part of your letter, you said, he's sincerely trying and is different, but I can't forget about what he's done. And I'm tired of people comparing sex addiction. Honestly, I'd rather have him be a drug addict and not, so it wasn't so personal to me. The other thing that may be happening here is if you're having trouble understanding it, you may also be having trouble believing that he really understands you. And this isn't just a matter, healing in a marriage isn't just a matter of his stopping the horrible behavior. There are some very serious talks the two of you need to have, and he needs to be able to communicate to you his grief over what's ultimately occurred to you. And the two of you have to come to a common understanding. Most women or men, when you're dealing with sexual addiction, until y'all can have a common view of this thing, you're going to have trouble feeling like moving on. And again, I don't know if he's not doing some other things that make it very difficult for you to feel like reengaging with him. You know, I would also recommend in this type of thing, if you haven't, if you could get with a counselor who could help maybe ferret through some of this stuff, it would probably be really useful. Some of the other guys on the call, do y'all have anything I should add?
I have a question because it seems like God has put together all these sex addiction questions. My husband's, all of his prior conduct, he had to stop when he was found out, because either a spouse of the woman he was involved with or a harassment charge or something like that forced the end of what he was in. This time the woman is divorced, and although I think it's part of his addiction, he says he's actually fallen for her, and this has nothing to do with his addictions this time.
Okay. Frequently, Cheryl, is this Cheryl?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Frequently what happens in
and she's, I don't know who what she looks like, but she was a customer at his dealership.
Yeah, I mean, frequently what happens is that the person in the sexual addiction has multiple anonymous encounters and eventually ends up in an entangled relationship.
Right, that's what happens.
That's pretty common. That doesn't mean, again, that this person is ultimately the solution to their problem, obviously. He still has the addiction. What's really weird about this type of case that you're talking about is they will sit there and end up cheating on the other person, which it gets really interesting at that point, and that's usually when the relationship ends, because the problem wasn't you, never will be. So anyway, hope that helps a little. I mean, the whole sexual addiction thing is very bizarre, but they really can get caught in that entangled relationship. Linda, are you here? Okay. Linda's question was this. All my prayers have been answered. My husband is home, and we're in counseling. We communicate somewhat better. Now I'm the one who's wondering if I really want to do this. I don't trust him, only God to guide him. But there are days I'm so depressed, wondering if I should just shuck the whole idea of having a better marriage. My husband left for his tennis partner, lived with her 9 months, and came back home to his family 7 months ago. It seems like I'm the one doing all the work, making him feel special at home and not judging him, and I get little in return. Why do I fight the feelings of not wanting this to work? Well, Linda, first off, and I don't know if this is just feelings or this is reality, but if he's not working a lot, in my mind, at trying to help you heal, there's something already wrong here. I would say that if you're 7 months in, when did he move out? He lived with her 9 months, came back home to his family 7 months ago, feels like I'm doing all the work, making him feel special at home, not judging him, and I get little in return. That line right there bothers me. You're getting close to a one-year anniversary, so you're already going to be struggling. But I would want him to be also, he should be working, helping you heal. And so, I mean, why are you fighting the feelings of not wanting to make this work? The only reason, only answer I have to that is, I think that you don't want to make that decision this early in the process. If you've committed to work it out, I think you need to wait probably about 18 months before you make a final decision, because at that point you're through the anniversary dates and you're going to know far better where he's at and where your heart's at and how you feel. The other thing you may find, typically if you're what I call a competent Carla, most competent Carlas don't begin to get mad if you're someone who's going to try to take care of things. Like, Cheryl, you're a competent person.
I am. Yes, I am.
Competent Carlas don't get mad for about 6 months into the process of return, and you're at 7 months. So my first guess is your anger is really, there's a good chance this is right now is when your anger is beginning to really boil. And I would just say that making a decision at the point when your anger is really starting to surface up is probably not the best time to go about making that decision. You probably want to get past and beyond the anger, because it will not seem worth it. And most people who are kind of that, they're kind of type A driven, going to work things out, they don't, it's almost like unconsciously they won't begin to experience the anger until they feel like they've got everything secure and battened down and all in place. And then it's like once they feel like there's a little bit of safety, it's like unconsciously that's when their psyche begins to let go of the anger. So that's the other thing that you might be experiencing when I see 7 months here. And if your husband's not doing anything, then why don't you have him give me a call and I'll try to whip him up or something. I don't know. He just needs, maybe he doesn't know what to do. I mean, hopefully your therapist can help him, but that's not right if he's not doing anything.
Rick, can I ask a question?
Yes.
This is Cheryl. Does, like, my husband just moved in with his affair partner.
Right.
What are the timelines on me for a holding pattern?
Ah, that is a great question. One of the things, Cheryl, that Leslie says that I think is really good is that you want to wait at least, you want to first off just pray and see what you hear God saying. I mean, there's one good reason to leave and one good reason to stay, and it's because God says so. However,
well, it took God 4 months to get me to draw a line in the sand.
Right. But I would, in a situation like yours, I would set a timeline. If he's living with his affair partner, and to me it would be much shorter rather than later, I would press on pretty quick. Because, you know, he needs to be at a place ultimately, Cheryl, where he's wanting to come back. And so if you go on and he sees that you really don't need him and that you're okay without him, and you're not waiting around for him. And I recommend, like in Love Must Be Tough, you just say, hey, you know, obviously you've made your choice. That's very clear. So I'm going forward. And, you know, maybe someday if you come to your senses, if I'm still available, you can talk to me. But I usually don't try to hold on if somebody's with an affair partner. Now, divorce oftentimes takes a long time. There's one exception to that. I'm sorry, Cheryl. The one exception I have to that is if the other person's saying they really desperately want to still try to figure out how to work the marriage and they're ambivalent, sometimes I'll recommend giving them like 3 months or 6 months to see if they can work through it.
Right. He told one of his good friends that he made his choice and time would tell if it was the right one. So he made his choice.
Then you move on. And you in the power struggle, take control. Do yourself a favor.
And that means filing also?
Oh, yeah.
Even though that's what he wants me to do is save
him
the trouble?
Absolutely. Forget saving him the trouble. Set yourself free. You know, the problem is y'all have a power struggle going. And you don't want to do what he wants you to do, understandably. At the same time, you need to take away his power. And there's, maybe I can explain it this way, Cheryl. Sometimes a woman will say to her husband, I want you to be a leader in this family. Now take charge. Now, if he becomes a leader in the family and begins to take charge, who's in charge?
Well, I'm the one that told him to take charge.
Exactly. So you're the one that's really in charge. So what that's called is double-bind communication. So what happens in double-bind communication, that guy only has, he thinks, two choices. One, he can either become a leader and end up feeling emasculated, or two, he can go passive-aggressive and refuse to do anything. At least she's not telling him what to do, but he's not being a leader, right?
Right, and he's done both.
And so the third choice, people don't see the third option. The third option is to say, No, I'm going to be the leader, but not because you're telling me to, but because this is what, you know, God wants me to do. This is what I feel I need to do. This is what I want to do. So forget what you said. I'm doing it for me.
You mean the guy, or are you talking about me?
Well, I'm talking about a guy in that situation.
Oh, okay.
I always have them act in their what they feel like is important, even if their wife wanted the same thing. I just say, no, if you feel like this is what God wants you, do it, and just tell her to go stuff it. You're not doing it for her. You're doing it for you.
Yeah.
And so you can – the third option is just because it's what he wants, it doesn't preclude you from doing it for you.
Yeah.
Because it's acting in your best interest in this sort of situation.
Okay, I just – you know, I don't know. I guess I never wanted the separation. I feel like I get to file and I'm going to be divorced, and he's going to say, well, she wanted it, she filed.
And you know what? The truth, we know the truth. But we'll talk about that. Let me get Wendy's question, and just some time we'll come back and
okay.
talk about that.
Okay.
Hey, Wendy, you ready?
I'm ready.
Do you mind if I read it out loud?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
I know it's really long.
That's okay. You did good, girl. I'm a member of Harbor and Cove. My husband and I have been married for 35 years. Wow, you've been married longer than me.
Oh, my gosh.
I've only been married 31.
Uh-huh.
Well, we are both recovering addicts with 20-plus years of recovery in NA. I just celebrated 21 years last Wednesday. Congratulations. A miracle. In our relationship recovery, we are still over 2 years post-discovery. And about 2 months post-final disclosure. It's been rough. The initial discovery had been about a long-term emotional affair, and the final disclosure was that my husband is a sex addict. The final disclosure was made, I truly believe, at the point that he realized through our recovery work that he was a sex addict. Obviously, he knew he was engaged in behaviors but did not realize what they meant. And that happens a lot, Wendy. My husband, within a few weeks of discovery, after some couples work, seemed to come to a spiritual awakening. That's the best way for me to describe it, I think. Not only did his attitude change, and at one point during one of the exercises that involved sitting face-to-face and looking into each other's eyes without speaking, he told me that it was the first time I realized that there was really someone in there. But it was like he was spiritually reborn. Even looked different, almost like he was growing. Everyone we knew commented on it. The question is, he says that since that time, he has not acted out in any way, and that from that point on, has lost the desire to do so. He says that now his sexual thoughts are directed toward me and that he feels connected in a way he did not before. I know that in my recovery from drug usage since that day, since the day I quit using the last time 21 years ago, that the desire to use has been lifted from me. My husband says he feels the same way about his acting out. That does not mean that I do not still go to meetings. I do and work the steps and have a sponsor and many people I sponsor, but the desire to use is gone. I've been granted a daily reprieve from active addiction. My husband has been going to SAA meetings, and I to COSA, and together we've attended RCA meetings. We're both willing to do these things and know that just because we don't feel like using or acting out doesn't mean that the problem is evaporated. I know that God does for us what we cannot do ourselves. It is delusional on our parts to think that this is possible.
Oh, I'm asking, is it delusional?
Oh, is it delusional? Okay, is it? No, is it?
Is it
delusional our parts to think that this is possible, that his desire to act out is gone? Of course, he's not been around any pornography for 2 years because he knows he can't be. But as I said, he said he's lost the desire. Of course, he also understands that it was a coping device, and he's learning new ways to deal with life and stresses and lots, and a lot of what's gone of that is gone now because of the sexual addiction, which was also the problem as well. Edit this question at will. I tried to condense, but obviously did not do so well with that. I would like to say that we've used the mentoring program, and it has been very helpful for us, although at times my mentor has had to listen to me be a little bit cranky. Thanks for the comments. You know, you're asking a great question, and my feeling about God is that if God is the creator God, Wendy, that means that one of his attributes has to be creativity, which means he doesn't like to do things the same way twice. He likes to do it creatively each time. That being said, because I don't want anybody to think that there's just kind of one way that recovery looks, I have known people when they have a significant, and this happened to me, when I had that spiritual conversion, so to speak, I mean, the desire to use was gone completely. It was bizarre. It was as if it had never existed. And if you've been in recovery for 21 years, you also know the term pink cloud.
Yes.
Yeah.
Never had one, though.
Well,
watched many, but have never had one.
Well, I'm sorry. They're fun.
Yeah.
They only last for a while. That's the problem with clouds, right? I can tell you that in my case, and this is the mistake I made, I did really well with no desire to use for about 5 years. And I find that for people who don't continue working program, 5 years is about the maximum. And at some point in there, you begin to believe your own press. You kind of think that you don't have a problem anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I'm sure you've watched 1,000 relapses. And
yes.
And so you begin to take the barriers down, and you think you're normal. I call it pretend normal. And you start
mm-hmm.
pretending normal. And, you know, I found that stuff came back with an absolute... Gosh. Yeah. And it was a lot tougher the second time around than the first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's been 20 years ago. So...
And Rick, for Wendy, that's exactly what happened in my marriage, because Doug, about every 5 years, we would have an incident, and it got worse.
Right.
And then this time, he says, "This isn't an incident. I'm okay. I got over all of that. This is really my, you know, true love," whatever. Yeah.
Well, I guess part of the question that I, you know, is he's been going to, he felt that once he understood, I mean, you know, once he realized that he was a sex addict, then he, you know, started doing step work through NA, through his sponsor in NA. And he, as soon as he, you know, had the realization, it's before we went to SA or RCA, he went to his sponsor and he told him, you know, that he was a sex addict and he's working on his 4-step right now
right.
with this sponsor. One of the things that we have both noticed by he's been going to SAA, I've been going to COSA, and we go to RCA together. The thing is he feels, and he doesn't know if he's being delusional about it, he feels that, you know, that he need, you know, that it's okay to go to SAA meetings, but he still feels like, because in Narcotics Anonymous, what you're dealing with is the disease of addiction. It doesn't matter if it was drugs, you know, gambling, overeating, whatever. It's, you know, there isn't any distinction really made.
Right.
So he feels, you know, that doing his step work, his sponsor knowing, you know, ultimately probably his sponsees knowing that, you know, he doesn't know if he's really covered by that. He feels like he is. He thinks it's been good for him to go to SAA to hear other people to understand about what his process was, because he said before he didn't even realize he had a process going on, you know, he was just doing it. And, part of the problem is in the area where we live, the SAA meetings are very small, and all of the people that are in don't have any kind of recovery. They're all, it would like be being in AA or NA and continually being in a newcomer's meeting.
Right, that's exactly
and,
right.
You know, you're listening to the problem. You're not, he says he's gone to all these meetings and he hasn't ever heard anybody talk about a sponsor or doing step work on it. You know, all they're doing is just rehashing what the, you know, what the problem is and not the solution. So,
right.
You know, and he's totally willing to continue going to them. It isn't that he's unwilling. The other thing I've seen in RCA and COSA is that there are so few people in the program that there aren't any people with any kind of recovery time. And we've been trying to get a sponsor couple in RCA for like 2 months. And not even a local one, but I mean one that's, you know, online by telephone or whatever. So, you know, so we don't know if we just keep going to those groups anyway or if it's something that is, a, you know, that is good enough, I guess, to go to just keep going to NA and using his sponsor and still, you know, addressing the sexual addiction but dealing with it with his step work through NA. I don't know. We don't know. We're
well, you know, my experience it depends a lot on the SAA group, just as you know, it can depend a lot on a particular NA group, Wendy.
Right. Okay.
And if you don't have a good group, it's my personal opinion that you're better off doing it through NA even than SAA.
I think, Rick, I can't hear you much anymore.
It's in a repeating mode, I think.
Well, I can't even hear him. Can you hear him?
I can hear him, but it's like repeating the same thing over and over again.
Well, I can't even hear him. Can you hear
kind
him?
Of like addiction.
I can hear him, but yeah, like but I can't hear his conversation, so I don't know if we should try to call back. That's kind of what my life feels like right now, that insanity.
That's what I was
kind
thinking.
Of spinning around and everything, yeah.
The fun house effect.
That was a good analogy, actually, whatever the phone did.
Wendy and Cheryl?
Yes?
Did you guys just have trouble with TalkShoe, too?
Yeah, Rick said he was going to fix the problem to hang in there.
Okay, it must have been a problem that he had. I heard some, like, some background noise, and I turned on
TalkShoe. No, it was echoing. It kept repeating. The last thing he said, it kept repeating about 10 times, and then we lost him, and then Cheryl and I started talking, and then each thing that we would say, it would repeat it at least once or twice.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
We can hear you now, Rick.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Oh, you're back.
He's back.
He did weird stuff to me, too. I don't know what happened.
I do. I tried to. I've done this before. I called in through Skype, and it freaked.
Oh. Well, don't do that anymore then, Rick.
I won't do that. Well, it's worked before.
I don't know. We decided it was a good analogy of the way our lives feel right now. So.
Oh.
Yeah, I got into a feedback loop. That was really interesting, and I couldn't make it stop.
Oh.
But Wendy, yeah, but what we were saying, do exactly, you know, I would work the program in terms of the NA program,
right.
And where you've got the support and you've got the sobriety and you've got a sponsor, because if you're just working, looking at problems and you're not living in the solution,
right?
Man, it is like, that's so counterproductive.
Well, I mean, it's like I said, sitting in a newcomer meeting all the time where you just want to get up and go over and smack the person in the head because all you're, you know, all you're hearing is the disease, not the, you know, not the solution.
Right. And that's kind of like you need to be focused. You know, we both agree. And I have found through the years that it's been difficult at times with SAA to find good meetings. And also mm-hmm. we've got some great meetings here. Other places,
yeah.
I mean, I've experienced through the nation different things. I've sometimes had people go to AA simply
mm-hmm.
because
yeah.
it was a healthier meeting what the NA meeting was.
Right.
Or the SA, I mean, the SAA meeting.
Right, I understand what you're saying.
So, yes, to your question. And no, I don't think he's being delusional, but yes, I would continue working the steps because...
Oh, yes.
This thing is...
Steps or die. Yes, we know that.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
and
Rick, that's what Doug stopped doing. He never finished them. So,
well, yeah, and if Doug, and usually when you quit doing the steps, you quit living, you quit growing, and it's, you know, it's not stalling out. Eventually, is going to happen.
Yeah,
well,
we told his counselor he just didn't need any more help. So,
we have. Mentor couple, you know, and that gives him somebody that he can talk specifically to about the sexual addiction, you know, so it isn't like, because his sponsor in NA is not a sex addict, you know, so, I mean, he's not going to understand, he understands how to work the steps on it, but he's not going to understand, you know, if something comes up, you know, for the way Denny's feeling or something. He's got, you know, he's got the mentor who is also.
And where'd that mentor come from?
From the
group?
Before I was in Harboring Hope, it was through ARC. I signed up for the mentoring program.
And that gets him one, too?
Yes. Uh-huh.
If they want it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's been very helpful.
And somebody came online, Rick, and I don't know who it was that said they were going to get mine for me, but I don't know who was talking.
That was Erin.
That was Erin.
And she's going to work
that
out.
Oh, okay.
He's the mentor getter.
Oh, okay.
I'm working on that, in fact, right now, guys. Right this minute. I'm looking for somebody good for you.
Yeah, well, too bad you can't find him one, but he wouldn't talk to him anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, my husband was a little reluctant, but, I mean, he's willing to get better, but, you know, he was still pretty uncomfortable with talking. And the thing with the mentor, it isn't on the phone. It's, you know, you're posting on a forum, I mean, just between you and them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot easier to be totally open with somebody, especially if you're not, you know, used to it, in, you know, in sending a post rather than having to talk. So I know he started out slowly at first and then, you know, got more comfortable.
Yeah, well, maybe God willing sometime in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
it's
and again,
a good program, the mentoring program. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Cheryl, I probably look at this thing a little differently than other people, but I'm not afraid of, this sounds horrible, but I mean, relapse to me is really my friend. It's the one thing that lets somebody know that they're not God. And if we can't figure out our powerlessness, we really do need the relapse just to be whole and safe for the people that love us.
Well, we got that far.
Right. And he still under the illusion that somehow he's found the solution to his problem.
Right. And got rid of the problem, actually.
Right. And
which has my name all over it.
You bet. And I don't know, have you ever lost your baggage when you're flying?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know what? Nobody's ever lost their personal baggage, though, when they go from one relationship to another. It's the one type of baggage that always shows up. So
well, that's what I'm praying for.
Oh, don't worry. His baggage didn't get lost in transit. And his baggage didn't have your name on it. He just doesn't know it yet.
Well, he said it got left behind with me, personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be... If you could be a fly on the wall and watch what happens when he discovers the truth, it would be entertaining.
I would like that, actually.
Well, Wendy, I don't know if you agree with all of that or not. you know, being an old timer. But
The coming back.
Yeah.
The relapsing.
Well, both.
Yeah, I don't know. I just see, you know, recovery as a journey process, and we just all have, you know, different paths on it. And I've seen people, you know, relapse, and it used to just break my heart every time I'd see it. But, you know, now I understand, although I have no personal intention of, you know, I don't ever want to have to go through that again. And I keep what the process was that got me here foremost in my brain all the time, you know, the pain that I was in, and I don't want to live like that anymore. But the thing is, I've watched people, you know, relapse, and you think that person's never going to get it, and it's the eighth time, and that's the time, you know.
Yeah.
You don't ever know. And I'm just always, no matter how many times somebody's gone back out, you know, I am always hopeful. I have to treat every time they come back like this is going to be the one. You know, this clean date is it. And for whatever we've got, you know.
Yeah, I've had so many relapses, and it never lasts. And Rick, it's interesting that you use that five-year thing, because that's the 3 to 5 year mark is always when you better start looking over your shoulder. And it's always come true.
Well, and the only way, you know, I got to 20 years was when I quit, when I started accepting that there was no way I could do it and that God could be to me all that I'm not. But I had to finally accept that I was not able.
Yeah, his counselor told him that he was fighting him and he wouldn't listen and that he couldn't do it by himself and he should keep going to he went to AA because we don't think we have anything else in our area. And he would go maybe once a month, and that's it. He wouldn't go. His counselor wanted him to go twice a week. He would go maybe once a month.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, you know, again, I think you'll find that somehow, I just think God brings the perfect circumstances to make it happen. Whatever those are. And guys, I need to get ready for our next session here. So it was so much fun just having two of you on the line. Hope that happens again sometime.
And we behaved
well,
too.
So, Wendy, tell your hubby I said hi. Cheryl, tell your hubby if you talk to him, I said bad choice, but that's okay. He'll figure it out.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to talk to me. He's kind of disappeared we don't know where he is, so.
Well, go take care of yourself. And while he doesn't know, you don't know where he's at, and you can't reach him, take advantage of that as much as you can.
Okay.
Okay.
God bless your work.
God bless you guys. I'll be talking to y'all next week, okay?
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.